Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at tailormade101.com. That's TAILORMADE101.com for details. We have a very exciting show in store for you today. So hello to everyone tuning in from Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and of course, North and South Americas. Jima and I are excited to be with you once again. So let's take a look at our topics for today. First up, hospital mom booted from the emergency room to die in jail. We take a look at autism and its increasing among children. We also look at the latest developments in the Trayvon Martin case, and we ask this simple question. Is Trayvon Martin the sacrificial lamb for black justice? Also, did Rick Santorum make a Freudian slip? We also look at much, much more. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button and follow me on Twitter. And that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open out there in the chat room. You can leave your comments, ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell. We want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events. All right. Welcome, everyone. So before we get started, I wanted to talk about this article in MSNBC.com, and it's entitled Hospital. Mom booted from ER to die in jail was treated appropriately. Now, officials at a St. Louis hospital on Thursday defended their actions in the case of a homeless woman who sought treatment for a sprained ankle and died in police custody after being arrested for refusing to leave the emergency room. And an autopsy determined that Anna Brown, an African-American female, death in a jail cell in September was caused by blood clots that formed in her legs and migrated to her lungs. The St. Louis Post-Dispatch reported. Now, the newspaper also obtained surveillance footage of the woman's final moments. In the video, officers are seen carrying Brown into a jail cell. The cell door closes and Brown is heard moaning and crying. Brian's family says authorities treated a 29-year-old woman of two unfairly and have hired a St. Louis-based lawyer, Keith Link. Now, Link did not respond to telephone messages from MSNBC on Thursday. But this, too, is another tragedy, presumably by some officials that didn't treat this African-American woman quite appropriately. And that's why I go back to the question. Is Trayvon Martin the sacrificial lamb for black justice. Is his death the reason most of these cases are now getting some traction? At any rate, I want to report, though, I want to talk a little bit about Chicago's Urban Prep School. Now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but for the third consecutive year, every single senior at Urban Prep Academy, the only all-black and all-male charter high school in Chicago, has been accepted to college. Now, of course, this is coming out of Urweb, and they say the academy also said that 83% of its first graduating class in 2010 has re-enrolled in a second year of college. A rebuttal to critics of the school who have charged that students aren't always ready for college, reports the Chicago Tribune. Now, critics have also suggested that Urban Prep squeezes out students with academic and discipline problems who other schools have to work with. Urban Prep officials acknowledge that this year's senior class of 85 was almost twice that size when the bar started out as freshmen. But Urban Prep CEO Tim King, in a meeting Thursday with the Chicago Tribune's editorial board, vigorously denied that troubled students are forced out of encouraged to leave. "We take the opposite view," King said. "We devote time and energy to those students so that they understand they can do well and they can have success if they modify their behavior." You know, regardless of what the critics say, it is truly a testament to be reporting, to be reading, to be listening to 100% for the third consecutive year, every single senior at Urban Prep Academy, the only all-black, all-male charter high school in Chicago, have been accepted to college. That's an awesome feat in itself. And I certainly have to congratulate the school and all its staff and teachers and everybody and their families. We cannot forget their family members as well. Okay, so now to Trayvon Martin. Now, I must admit, over the last few days, I was wondering, was I starting to get fatigue about the Trayvon Martin case? I tell you, it's on every social media site. Is on the news, is on the TV, and, you know, sadly to say, every time that we do see something, it's new evidence being proposed, and I don't understand why they're just dripping this information out slowly, but at any rate, it is coming out. But it's saturating the news, and I was wondering to myself, are we going to ever get to an end to this case? So I was starting to feel some fatigue. But as I began to socialize this to Jima, she reminded me of the similarities this case had with the Montgomery Boys boycott. And so, of course, like you, I might say, well, okay, now how so? There was no one murdered in the Montgomery Boys boycott. I mean, that we can talk about. I mean, that was kind of communicated to the media. I'm sure a lot of things happened. But that was nothing to directly tie the Montgomery bus boycott to a murder. But then we began to have a little bit more conversation around the issue, and we started to kind of tie the Montgomery bus boycott movement, the similarities with the Trayvon Martin movement. And you may ask the question, how? But the truth of the matter is the similarities lies in the persistence of both cases. The persistence to seek the truth, the persistence to seek justice, the persistence to keep an issue that has been plaguing African-American men, in this case, as in its entirety in the other case, for many, many generations. So I began to loosen my feelings with respect to this fatigue. And then I get a couple of hours ago, an email from Tyler Perry. And, you know, I go to Twitter and, you know, he talks about an email. He says, Trayvon Martin, Felipe Santos, and Terrence Williams, what's going on in Florida? So he tweeted this out. And so I go out there and take a look and I say, and it reads this way. It says, a few days before President Obama was supposed to speak out at my studio, I was leaving the studio headed to the airport. Now, most times when I leave the studio, I have an unmarked escort. Other times, I constantly check in my rearview mirror to be sure that I'm not being followed. It's a safety precaution that my security team taught me. As I got to an intersection, I made a left turn from the right lane and was pulled over by two police officers. I pulled the car over and put it in park. Then I let the window down and sat in the car waiting for the officer. The officer came up to the driver's door and said that I made an illegal turn. I said, I signaled to get into the turning lane, then made the turn because I have to be sure I'm not being followed. He said, why do you think someone would be following you? Now, before I could answer, Tyler Perry continues, I heard a hard banging coming from the passenger window. I had never been in this position before, so I asked the officer who was at my window. What was going on and why is someone banging on the window like that? He said, let your window down. Let your window down. Your windows are tinted. As I let down the passenger window, there was another officer standing on the passenger side of the car. He said, what is wrong with you? The officer said to him, he thinks he's being followed. Then the second officer said, why do you think someone is following you? What is wrong with you? Before I could answer the officer on the passenger side, the one on the driver's side had reached into the car and started pulling on the switch that turns the car on and off, saying, put your foot on the brake, put your foot on the brake. I was so confused as to what he was doing or what he thought he was doing. It looked like he was trying to pull the switch out of the dashboard. I finally realized that he thought that switch was the key. So I told him that it wasn't the key he was grabbing. I reached down into the cup holder to get the key, not realizing that the key had a black leather strap on it. As I grabbed it, they both tensed up, and I dropped it as I heard my mother's voice from when I was a little boy. My mother would say to me, if you get stopped by the police, especially if they are white policemen, you say yes, sir, and no, sir. And if they want to take you in, you go with them. Don't resist, you hear me? Don't make any quick moves. Don't run. You just go. Now, my mother was born in 1945 into a segregated hotbed town in rural Louisiana. She had known of many colored men at the time who were lynched and never heard from again. Since I was her only son for 10 years, growing up, she was so worried about me. It wasn't until I heard her voice that I realized that both of these officers were white. The officer on the driver's side continued to badger me. Why do you think someone is following you? Then I said, I think you guys need to just write the ticket and do whatever you need to do. It was so hostile. I was so confused. It was happening so fast that I could easily see how the situation could get out of hand very quickly. I didn't feel safe at all. But one officer stopped his questioning and said, we may not let you go. You think you're being followed. What is wrong with you? At this point, I told him that I wanted to get out of the car. I wanted the passerbys to see what was happening. As I stepped out of the car, another officer pulled up in front of my car. This officer was a black guy. He took one look at me and had that, oh no, look on his face. He immediately took both officers to the back of my car and spoke to them in a hushed tone. After that, one of the officers stayed near his car while one came back, very apologetic. I said all of that to say this. Do you see how quickly this could have turned for the worse? Now I know that there are many great officers, patrolmen, and security guys out there. I am aware of that. But although we have made significant strides with racial profiling in this country, the world needs to know that we are still being racially profiled. And until this situation has improved greatly, I am not sure how a murder in Florida can be protected by a stand your ground law. And in another case that I've been screaming at the top of my lungs about, also in Florida, is the case of Terrence Williams and Felipe Santos, a young black man and a young Mexican man. 8 years ago in Naples, Florida, they were both put in the back of Deputy Steve Calkins' police car and never heard from again. They were never arrested, never brought to jail. They were put into the back of a Deputy Calkins car and never heard from again. And to this day, Deputy Steve Calkins is a free man. I guess it's time to march in Naples now. Racial profiling should be a hate crime investigated by the FBI. That way, local government can make the decision on whether or not these people get punished. And so as I began to hear Tyler Perry's letter, as I began to read his email, again, this was just a couple hours ago, as I began to have the conversation with Jima about the persistence that the Montgomery Boys boycott had, I began to know I must muster up the energy to keep my excitement going. Although it's on every channel, I must continue to be on the front lines for justice, because this has been going on for generations and generations and generations. So, of course, through that conversation, through Tyler Perry's letter, and through the exposure of these other cases, I began to suppress my fatigue. I began to get a newfound energy with this case. And so after the break, we're going to continue to talk about the new development in this case. I'm going to play for you another account of happening to another African-American man. This time it was a soldier, a previous Marine, that also was a police officer at one point in time. So I want you to hear from his son the activities that took place when we return. So it's time for another break. It's time for a break, and when we return, we're going to actually play that tape for you. So don't go anywhere. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online. driving people around me crazy, and I wanted to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East Point friend.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. In just a few minutes, we are going to open up the phone lines. But before we do that, joining me live in the studio is the executive producer of Kern Events and the chief operating officer for TaylorMade Training and Consulting. I introduce to some and present to others, no other than Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, in just a few minutes, we're going to play the tape about this incident that happens in White Plains, New York. A lot of people haven't heard about it, about Kenneth Chamberlain. And we're going to listen to his son's interview. But before we do that, I want to talk to you a little bit about the conversation we had so people can get a little insight. You know, we talked about I was getting a little fatigued about the Trayvon Martin case because it was being covered, you know, in a lot of different ways. You know, it was kind of saturated by the news. But you reminded me of the Montgomery bus boycott and their persistence and how we should make a correlation there. So tell the listening audience kind of a little bit on why you made that comparison.
Well, for two reasons. Well, it's probably more than two, but the main one is that we expect we live in a time now where we expect change and to happen immediately. We think if we stand on top of the table and scream loud enough, then it's done. And yet, as it relates to laws and justice and things of that nature, but in all of our getting, we should get an understanding. And so when you look at the fact that during that time period, the only way they had to really communicate with each other was probably via church, because that's kind of where it all kicked off at and where the decision was made as to what they were going to do. And they made a decision that, you know, we are not going to ride the buses until the buses are completely integrated, which means we can sit wherever we want to sit, not integrated with we can sit in the back, not we have our own buses. We want to sit where we want to sit on the bus. So, and by saying that, they were clear about what they wanted. We want to be able to sit where we want to sit. And from the time they started till they ended over a year later, they did not give in. They did not say, okay, I quit. They kept going because they knew what they wanted. They wanted to ride on the bus wherever they wanted to, without being threatened, without being killed, without being kicked off the bus, without being required to stand. It was simple. We want to ride on the bus. And no, we don't want a separate bus. No, we don't want to just ride in the back of the bus. We want to be able to walk on the front of the bus, pay our money, and if there's a seat, have a seat. That was it.
Yeah, and that's exactly why I see that. This particular case, I don't see a lot of anger like I didn't see back then when you look at the history. You know, I see a lot of organization like I see back then, you know, with them getting together on certain causes and having these behind-the-scenes meetings. And I see a ultimate purpose, at least that one of the purpose, and everybody's saying the same message. We want an arrest. Like back then, you just kind of enumerated all the things they were talking about then. So the similarities, are stark similarity there. So I want to know where do you think that, do you think there's more people out there that were feeling like me fatigued, and how do we reinvigorate those people not to give up just like they did in the Montgomery bus boycott?
Well, that's right. I do think there's a lot of people that expect the wheels of justice, as they say, to have already rolled by now. And that for Mr. Zimmerman to have been arrested because we said he should be arrested. And it doesn't work like that. You know, it takes time. And although we know the preponderance of evidence is huge, that shows by the slightest hand he should have been arrested. Not even doing the analysis on the voice and the analysis on the on you know whether or not he said this or didn't say this on the tape. Just pure right on the scene, he should have been arrested. And that's all we've talked about. And so people's fatigue is that, you know, why are they still marching? You know, I've seen it online. I've seen it on Facebook and different places. You know, we need to do something else. No, we don't do anything else until we get the first thing we said we wanted. We said we wanted an arrest. And so you keep marching. You keep protesting. You up the ante. Okay, so we've been there three times in massive rallies from last Thursday, last Monday. Now they're back. They're in Miami today, probably doing more than what we think they're doing. There's probably some strategies going on. So now you turn the fire up a little bit. So now we're not just going to protest. We're not just going to march for justice. Now we're gonna probably have an impact on somebody's economy at some point. Some point, somebody who is supporting what is not happening is going to start to feel a little pressure.
That's the critical piece.
I don't know what that's going to look like, but I feel, right, because I saw somewhere, and I didn't get to read the article today, that Reverend Al has made a couple of statements today. So I need to, you know, find out what he said. But I know one of them has something to do with some economic issues. And so we turned the fire up a little bit because, you know, all we've ever wanted was for him to be arrested.
And so, again, that's the critical piece between the Montgomery Bus boycott. Let me say it this way. That's the missing link that I have between the Montgomery Bus boycott and the Trayvon Martin case. You know, when I responded back to Tyler Perry, I said that, you know, I was getting fatigued, and I told him that about our conversation we had about the Montgomery Bus boycott, and then we draw those parallels, right? The thing that I didn't point out is the things that are really truly different. And that economic piece was, and in fact, the economic piece was the critical piece in getting them to move, to do something. And so, you know, we know this is America, and we know that most people are really challenged when their money is challenged. So right now, we need to figure out what that critical piece is that will cause them to take action. Because right now, the protests are good. We've raised the level of conversation. We shined a light on this issue. Until we hit them in the pocket some kind of way, then I think this is going to be a conversation that's going to be it may last for a longer time than the Montgomery Bus boycott.
Well, you have two things you're dealing with. You have the fact that they immediately, if we go back to Montgomery, that bus company immediately began to lose money. It wasn't like it was something that, you know, over time they lost money. No, they immediately started losing money, but that didn't change them right away. So they could have easily given up and was like, well, it's not bothering them that they losing money, but they kept going anyway. So they had an immediate economic impact in that particular situation, but they were steadfast about what they truly wanted. They didn't on what it was that they really wanted. And because they did not waver on what it was they wanted, that's why they were able to stay on.
Okay, so let's move now to Tyler Perry's letter. I just read it, his email that he sent out. And what do you think about the fact? And I also responded to him by saying, you know, it is true that, you know, he experienced that. But just think, if it wasn't Tyler Perry that got out of that car, how it could have escalated, right? I mean, he kind of clearly explained his situation. He got stopped by the cops. They came on his passenger side. They came on his driver's side. They started to get a little hostile, and then he stepped out of the car. And then it wasn't until that brother cop came up and says, "Yo, I recognize this dude. You know, this is Tyler Perry." And he pulled the other cops aside. Just think, if that we wouldn't have had that particular, and the officer been there, where it could have escalated to?
Well,
And you right. know, and there's a whole bunch of people out there not know Tyler Perry. You know what I'm
right.
saying? So,
right.
so what do you think about that letter?
Well, it happens all the time, though. I mean, you know, when you, I was watching the other night ABC News had a race conversation with several people that was hosted by Robin Roberts, and he had Hill Harper on there, and Mary stopped by, and just a couple other people. And it was just a wide range of people in the entertainment world that just talked about their own personal experiences with the police. And until somebody recognized who they were, you know, it could have been them that could have been on the other side of something tragic. And so what does that say about society in its totality, though? Because what about the person that isn't Tyler Perry, that's still well-dressed, you know, driving like he's supposed to drive and doing what he's supposed to do and all these things, and yet still gets pulled over for no reason?
Yeah.
How can we
yeah.
proclaim to be such a nation that wants to spread democracy around the world, and yet we have these issues that we've been dealing with here since the beginning of time? So it's a sad state that so many, and it's been heart-wrenching. Rock Center did a show as well on NBC with Brian Williams, and you had a couple of their hosts, Tamron Hall, and a couple of their analysts and special guest contributors. Torre was on there, and Ron Allen, and Coach Dungy, you know, and he said he would gather all of his players and would say to them, here's what you need to do. Do not be outside after midnight. This is what a professional football coach is saying to professional football players about where they should be and how they should act and what happens if. And how many of them had to call up on that?
Yeah.
How many of them had to remember that conversation?
Yeah, sad state of affairs. So let's move now to the real issue at hand about Trayvon Martin. You know, and we were talking about this last night about the fact that Trayvon, that there has not been an arrest, and it doesn't look like there's going to be an arrest, because how much more evidence do they need to make an arrest? I mean,
right.
OJ Simpson went to jail with a lot less when he's quote unquote killed those two white people.
Right.
So OJ now was acquitted, and he did not do it. But OJ went to jail for a lot less than what they have on Zimmerman. So
right.
What does it take to get an arrest for this guy?
I don't know, because there's the preponderance of evidence is, and just for an arrest, no one is talking about he's guilty. No one is saying he needs to go, you know, he's convicted of anything. All we're saying is there's enough evidence. When the chief of police a couple of weeks ago made the statement, this is what sent everybody over the edge. It was the police chief's statement that when he came out and said, we believe the recount of George Zimmerman and that we do not have probable cause to arrest. There would be no arrest. When he made that statement, it was at that point that everybody was like, what do you mean there's no probable cause? Just the fact that he killed somebody, you still could have arrested him. And then if all your investigation comes back clean, then fine.
Exactly.
Let
right.
go.
And that's what I'm
but
saying about OJ.
But you made no arrest.
And they arrested OJ on some droppings of blood. I mean,
right.
just a piece of it.
Right, right. And on hearsay that he had got into it with her earlier in the day.
Right.
I mean, you
this
know, just,
guy
just you know, right, yeah, yeah.
Killed Trayvon. I mean, the fact that he shot him is not disputed.
And the fact that he followed him when they told him not to, that's not disputed.
And the fact that the officer came out this week and said that he didn't believe him and he was overruled.
Right.
So that to me, that's enough evidence to make an arrest.
And
we
not
didn't
only
say convict
enough evidence,
the man, make the arrest and do the investigation.
Right. But not only is it enough to make an arrest, it's also enough to start an investigation into the Sanford Police Department.
That's right. 323-580-5712. 323-580-5712 is the number to call. Zima, so April 10th, they're going to try to get back together and make a decision. But what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think sometime this week that there probably will be an arrest. I'm going to go out on a limb there and say that. I've seen a couple of people online say that as well. I know Jeff Johnson has made that statement as well. And so I think at some point this week there will probably be an arrest because they will see the fire turned up a little bit. That's probably what's going to come out of today's march and rally and meeting of the minds down there in Miami. And so once we, and then there's a National Day of Prayer tomorrow as well as we, go into this next phase. There's a National Day of Prayer, different times of the day to just kind of speak and calm, for people to be calm and yet for justice to be served. And what does that look like? So I do think that by midweek or definitely as we go into the resurrection weekend, I think he will be arrested. And that's all we've asked for, was for him to be arrested.
Definitely.
And then let everything else fall where it needs to fall.
Okay, so I asked the question at the beginning of the show, is Trayvon Martin the sacrificial lamb for black justice? And I pose that question simply because since his death, has shined a lot of light on these injustices towards African Americans across the country, not just in Florida, but across the United States. This is happening, this case brought home to me like no other. And I don't know how many people are aware of this particular case, but Kenneth Chamberlain Sr., a 60-year-old African American Marine veteran, was shot dead by White Plains Police Department after they were called to his home at 5 a.m. for a medical alert. Now, a 911 call depicts the man as being frightened and telling the police to leave him alone. The police responded with racial slurs and demanded he open the door. By the time the police left, Chamberlain had been hit with a taser, projectile beanbags, and then shot dead in his chest by live ammo. Now, there's an interview that's out there on YouTube called Killed at Home, New York White Plains Police Call. And I want you to hear the interview with Kenneth Chamberlain Jr., the victim's son. And I must warn you, this is some real horrific things happening here. So if you got your kids around, you really don't want them listening to this part of the show. This is kind of graphic in nature. It's kind of very explicit. Not a lot of vulgar language, but the fact that how it happened is really kind of startling, if you will. So take a moment to listen to this to a few minutes of this interview.
The death of Trayvon Martin continues to draw national attention. Today we look at another controversial shooting of an African-American male that has received far less scrutiny. On the morning of November 19th, a 68-year-old former Marine named Kenneth Chamberlain, with a heart condition, accidentally pressed a button on his medical alert system while sleeping. Responding to the alert, police officers from the city of White Plains, New York, arrived at Chamberlain's apartment in a public housing complex shortly after 5 a.m. By the time the police left the apartment, Kenneth Chamberlain was dead, shot twice in the chest by a police officer inside his home. Police gained entry to Chamberlain's apartment only after they took his front door off its hinges. Officers first shot him with a taser, then a beanbag shotgun, and then with live ammunition.
Police have insisted the use of force was warranted. They said Kenneth Chamberlain was emotionally disturbed and had pulled a knife on the officers. This is David Chung, Public Safety Commissioner in White Plains.
The officers first used an electronic taser, which was discharged, hit the victim, and had no effect. While the officers were retreating, the officers then used a beanbag shotgun.
Relatives of Kenneth Chamberlain have questioned the police portrayal of events that led to his death, and they say audio and video recorded at the scene back up their case. According to the family, Kenneth Chamberlain can be heard on an audio recording of his call to the medical alert system operator saying, quote, "Please leave me alone. I'm 68 with a heart condition. Why are you doing this to me? Can you please leave me alone?" Officers allegedly responded by calling Chamberlain a racial slur while urging him to open the door. The audio recording of the incident has not been made public and remains in the possession of the Westchester District Attorney's Office. In early December, Kenneth Chamberlain, a retired Marine, was buried with military honors. The family posted video of part of the ceremony. Several months after his death, the name of the officer who killed Kenneth Chamberlain has yet to be released. The DA has vowed to convene a grand jury to determine if any of the officers should face charges. We invited the White Plains Police Department and the Westchester DA's office onto the program, but they declined to join us or issue a comment. But we are joined by Kenneth Chamberlain Jr., the son of Kenneth Chamberlain Sr., the victim, and by two of the family's attorneys. Mayo Bartlett is the former chief of Bias Crimes Unit of the Westchester County District Attorney's Office and the former chair of the Westchester County Human Rights Commission. Randolph McLaughlin is a longtime civil rights attorney. He teaches at Pace Law School. We welcome you all to Democracy Now! Our condolences to your family, Kenneth Chamberlain, on the death of your father.
Thank you.
Tell us what you understand happened early in the morning of November 19th.
Well, it's my understanding that, from what I've gathered right now, that my father accidentally pushed his medical pendant around his neck. He could have possibly turned over on it. We don't know. We can only speculate about that.
Why did he wear it?
He has a heart condition, and he also suffered from COPD. And when the pendant was triggered,
you're holding that
yes,
in his
hand. Yes, this is his pendant right here. It was triggered, and the medical company, there's a box inside his home. The medical company asked him if he was all right. They didn't get a response. So automatically, if you don't get a response, they send medical services to your house. They inform the police that they are responding to a medical emergency, not a crime. And once they arrived at my father's home, my father did tell them that he was okay, but for some reason they wanted to gain entry into my father's home. I don't know why. And in the audio, you hear my father telling them that he's fine.
Now,
he's okay.
This is an important point, that there was audio going on throughout this between the firm and your father.
Correct.
And so much of the of the activity of the police was caught on this audio.
Yes, it was.
So the box on the wall records everything?
Actually, a box that just sat on his table in the his dining room area. It just sat there, and it's connected to the phone company. So if he does trigger it, as I said, you hear a loud beeping noise, and then the operator from their central station will come on, and they say, "Mr. Chamberlain, are you okay? You triggered your alarm. Is everything all right?" And, of course, if they don't get a response, they then contact
me. Now, you were able to hear this audio because the DA's office allowed you to hear it. How did you?
Yes.
But it has not yet been released.
No, it hasn't.
So continue. You hear your father through the door telling the police he's okay. This is about 5 in the morning?
Yes. He's saying that he's okay. He's saying that he did not call for them. But they were very insistent. They were banging on the door, banging on the door, banging on the door. So you hear one of the officers say to him, "Well, you triggered your alarm now." He said, "That's because I want you to leave me alone." And they just kept telling him, open the door, let us see that you're all right. At some point, the door was cracked open because the police officers have a taser that has a camera on it, and it also has audio. So you could see where the door was cracked open. So once you've gotten a visual and you've seen that my father is okay and he's telling you that he's okay, why would you still insist on getting into the apartment, which is the question that I have? And they weren't responding to a crime. He was sleeping and accidentally triggered his alarm.
And the officers then...
Okay. So, Jima, this is, again, I asked the question that I posed earlier. Is Trayvon Martin the sacrificial lamb for black justice? Because now, since his death, case after case after case is coming to the forefront. Here it is, a 60-year-old African-American Marine veteran was shot dead by the White Plains Police Department. Now, obviously, there's a lot of video, there's a lot of audio that took place in this particular instance. And just like in the Trayvon Martin case, the tapes are not being released. What are they trying to hide in this case, Jima?
They're trying to hide the truth. I mean, here once again, if things happened as the son and as even the people who was probably listening from the medical alert system, if things happened as they say they did, there's no way that can be a justified shooting. When you hear them call him out of his name, you hear him tell them he is not, he's okay, why are y'all bothering me? I mean, according to what the medical alert company has said to the son, because they haven't heard anything for themselves yet, this is all what they're getting from the company because it was recorded there. But if all of it is what it's saying, there's no way a district attorney, a police chief, or anybody can say that this was a justified shooting when you were called, they told you it wasn't a crime, that it was a medical condition. So why would you want to harass somebody that's already, if they were in distress? Let's say he was having a problem. You know, let's say, you know, he was, you know, something was wrong with him medically, and you come busting in, taking the doors off the hinges and yelling and screaming at him, you know, potentially could have sent him right on over the edge. So they didn't handle it right from the beginning. And so when you look at the issue with Trayvon, and there have been previous Trayvons that have gone unnoticed and or even unreported. And I think people are just saying, you know what, I'm tired of us acting like all is well. And it's not. Our young boys are getting killed on the street every day. I mean, just the other day, there was another one out in Pasadena, California. You had somebody call, you know, make a fake 911 call talking about there was two black boys with a gun and a backpack. And so who they end up shooting? A student athlete who had no gun, no backpack, and the person now has to. Now that person who made the fake 911 call is facing charges. But the police was reacting to what they thought, right? So here we are again. I mean, and this just happened last week.
So again, you know, it seems like me again, I really hate to use it in this context, but Trayvon Martin is the sacrificial lamb for black justice in America. And more and more of these cases are starting to come to light. And, you know, and that's why I was saying early on about me being fatigued about the Trayvon Martin case. At first, I was like, man, here it is again. But as we started, you know, to have the conversation around the Montgomery bus boycott and why it was so relevant and why they needed to be persistent and why they couldn't give up until justice prevailed, then I began to get a little bit more energy towards what's going on here. I can now continue the conversation with the same enthusiasm I had on day one, even though it may be day 361. But I still want to maintain, because, you know, looking at all the different instances that this has happened around America, and, you know, and here's another case. I don't know if you know about this case, but I'm going to play one more case. And then we're going to have a conversation about it. Listen to another similar case of a police shooting another person. Take a listen.
How could this be justified? You took my sister away from me.
A suburban man grieves the loss of his sister, who died today after being shot in the head by an off-duty Chicago police officer. Good evening. 22-year-old Rakia Boyd and a man were both shot early yesterday by an off-duty detective on the city's west side.
Well, tonight, family and friends who were at her side when she passed away today are calling for a federal investigation into her death. ABC 7's Ben Bradley spoke with the family members, and he joins us now with more on the story tonight, Ben.
Cheryl, Ron, Rakia Boyd's family says they were notified by police that she had been shot, but they have heard nothing since then. Neither an explanation of what happened nor a condolence call. They insist that she was an innocent bystander.
This young, beautiful girl, dead in the streets. Why?
Rakia Boyd's family brought two photos of her today. In the first, she is a smiling, happy 22-year-old woman. The second photo was snapped only a few hours ago, shortly before she died.
All we want to know is, what happened?
Just after 1 o'clock yesterday morning, the police union says an off-duty detective rolled down his car window and asked a group of people gathered near Douglas Park to quiet down. In response, police say a 39-year-old man pointed a gun at the officer, who then drew his own weapon and fired. The bullets hit the alleged gunman in the hand. Rakia Boyd was also hit in the head as she stood nearby.
They said that the shooting is justified. But how is it justified when you got a young girl up there with a bullet hole in her head? What kind of justice is that?
Witnesses told ABC 7 yesterday that no one pulled a gun on the off-duty officer, and prosecutors only charged the man who police say had a gun with aggravated assault, a misdemeanor.
It's at least 60, 70 people sitting in the park. You know, ain't nobody got no gun. Everybody out there just hanging out. That's it.
Boyd's large family from South Suburban Dalton sees similarities between what happened to her and the case of the unarmed Florida teen shot by a neighborhood watch volunteer.
First you got Trayvon, now you got Rakia. Senseless. Senseless violence. It didn't have to happen.
So again, you know, is Trayvon Martin the sacrificial lamb for black justice in America? You know, and it seems to me that these cases just keep coming up. I mean, again, we're seeing case after case after case of just black lives being taken. And in this particular instance, you know, like the previous one we discussed was just that they were out in the park hanging out. An off-duty cop didn't have on any uniform, didn't even have any identifying markers, didn't flash his bag, comes up and tell people keep it down or keep whatever he said to them. And, of course, if it is, let's assume that it is loud, right? If you go to the car and you know, trying to see who it is, and all of a sudden you somebody pulling their gun out on you and just shooting for no reason, no apparent reason, what's that all about? Then, even if the report said that he had a gun, he was not charged with having a gun. So although, you know, the early reports say he had a gun, there was no evidence that he had a gun, and then the police didn't file any charges against him for having a gun. So obviously he didn't have a gun. But yeah, he gets shot, and then Rakia gets killed. It's Trayvon Martin. It's Trayvon Martin, the sacrificial lamb for black justice in America. Jima, you say what?
I totally agree with that. I think we're going to be overwhelmed, I think, with the amount of cases that are going to come forward. Not because all of a sudden it's happening. We're going to be overwhelmed that it's been happening for so long and we didn't hear about it. Because, you know, let's be real clear in terms of how the Trayvon Martin story got its legs. It got its legs through social media. It got its legs through black media. It was black media and black correspondents.
That's right.
That began to cover this story.
That's right.
And had it not been for them, and then with the reach, I mean, even, you know, there's been cases that, you know, people want to, you know, say what they want to say about Reverend Al and Reverend Jesse, but, you know, there have been cases that they've gotten involved in that did not get this sort of mainstream support. So it's not just that they're there, that this is getting this type of support. It is because people are tired of sitting back and trying to hold it together, trying to play like, you know, well, maybe he was doing this, and, you know, maybe the officer was right. You know, we keep making excuses for the officer or for the person that pulls the trigger, and we never pay any attention to the life that was lost. And this is just one of those cases where,
yeah.
And I said this last week, it could not have happened, you know, in terms of how things are playing out. Every attorney that I've seen that is connected to this Trayvon Martin case is on top of their game, every last one of them. Every witness that I've seen that is coming out trying in support of Trayvon Martin and his family has been above board. They have been able to say what they need to say in such a manner that you can understand it and you can believe it. And that's what's important, that you can understand it and that you can believe it. When you have a third, and they've been black, they've been white, they've been young, they've been male, they've been female, across the board, you know, people have stood up and said, this is it. And they're saying this is it because we're tired of acting as if all is well when we know that it's not. And this, as you say, Trayvon case may be the sacrificial lamb in terms to have the conversation about race, because white people have been really taken aback that black parents have to talk to their black boys about how to act in front of the police.
Oh, yeah.
They
had
no idea that conversation was happening.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not one that they have to have.
That's right.
So they had no idea that in homes across the country, north, south, east, and west, that this conversation happens when your child reaches a certain age. That's a male child. And it's been going on for forever.
Yeah.
This isn't a new conversation.
Right.
This is a conversation that black parents have been having with their children for generations about
and we'll
how
continue
to
have.
Act. Because, right, until the system is turned on top of its head and acknowledges the discriminatory practices. Not stating that people are discriminating, but there are discriminatory practices that have to be dealt with. And that is why it is extremely important for the Department of Justice to come in and do what it has to do. The fact that under Bush, they had pretty much gotten rid of the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice. And I don't even think most of America knew that. But under this administration, of course, they have reinstituted it, and there have been several, I'm thinking they almost up in the hundreds of cases that they have dealt with that we don't even know anything about. But if we fail to stand our ground and stick to what we say we want, for us right now, justice is an arrest, and let everything else play itself out. After that, then we'll say, well, now the Sanford Police Department needs to be looked at. Then we'll say, now the prosecutor's office needs to be looked at. I mean, we'll continue until that entire system is dealt with and that systems around the country will begin to take note. Somebody is now paying attention. And whether you're in Sanford, Florida, Pasadena, California, Chicago, White Plains, New York, we are paying attention to the shootings that are happening primarily to people of color who, for no fault of their own, have been gunned down.
I definitely have to agree with you.
That's what the Trayvon Martin case would do.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. It's time for a quick break, but when we return, we're going to keep the conversation going. In the meantime, check out our blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade101.blogspot.com. We'll be back in a moment. Stay tuned. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership,
Our company's tailor-made training and consulting, current events, and Ask Gema can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Gema. And Ask Gema says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We've been discussing the Trayvon Martin case, and I mentioned early on that I thought I was getting fatigue around the case because all the news media was saturating their coverage with Trayvon Martin. It was on every channel all the time. It's on the web. It's on my iPad. It's on my iPhone. It's on my Android. It's on my BlackBerry. I mean, it's on everything. I'm saying, man, I'm getting, you know, this is wearing me out a little bit. Until Gema and I started having the conversation around the Montgomery bus boycott. How, you say, is it relevant? Well, I say this. The persistence that they had in the Montgomery boycott to make sure that they ran the task, everything they wanted, they continued to fight for over a year. Here it's been only a few months and people like me starting to get weak already. Then I started to hear about this couple of cases that I just mentioned. And then I got a little bit more energy. And then I got an email from Tyler Perry talking about his incident, about him being stopped by the cops and all the things that happened to him. And I began to know that, yeah, you know, I need to suck it up and drive on. You know, I can't let this moment in our history pass me by getting quote unquote fatigue. And so I continue the conversation. I continue to fight for justice because we need to keep it going. No justice, no peace. I want to shift the conversation now to something that is going to be a little startling to you to hear. I have a tape of Rick Santorum making a statement about President Obama. Now, when I originally posted it on the blog, it was a small little snippet of him calling what I would consider the president a racial slur. Now, of course, I went and did some more research to see if there were an extended version of his statement. I wanted to make sure I had the right context. I wanted to make sure that the tape was not doctored, because what he said hurt me more than anything else. For a presidential candidate to be saying this about our living president while he's in office. And so if you haven't heard this tape, take a listen to this, and I want you to respond. Take a listen.
This is Barack Obama's vision for America. It is why he proposes the bills he proposes. It is why he whispered off camera, he thought. Say, just give me a little space. We'll take care of this after the election. We know the candidate Barack Obama, what he was like, the anti-war government, America was a source for division around the world, that what we were doing was wrong, and we needed to pull out, and we need.
Okay. Now, for those of you that didn't catch it, he almost called President Obama the N-word. Now, I want you to be the judge, and I want to remind you that this tape is not doctored. It is full context before and after he made the statement, and I want you to listen to how the context of his and his speech pattern changed all of a sudden when he realized what he was about to say. And I want to remind you of what he said not too long ago. Now, take a listen at this. Remember this?
I was in Indianola a few months ago, and I was talking to someone who works at the Department of Public Welfare here, and she told me that the state of Iowa is going to get fined if they don't sign up more people under the Medicaid program. They're just pushing harder and harder to get more and more of you dependent upon them so they can get your vote. That's what the bottom line is. I don't want to make people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money. I want to give them.
He don't want to make black people's life better. That's what he said then. And then this is what he says today. I want you to listen very close. I'm going to play it one more time, and then I want you to weigh in on this. The number to call is 323-580-5712. What do you think he said? Take a listen.
This is Barack Obama's vision for America. It is why he proposes the bills he proposes. It is why he whispered off camera, he thought. Say, just give me a little space. We'll take care of this after the election. We know the candidate Barack Obama, what he was like. The anti-war government, America was a source for division around the world. That what we were doing was wrong, and we needed to pull out.
Okay. So either he really has a real embedded kind of racism going on in his life, or I don't know how to explain it. But I can tell you, it seemed to me something like a Freudian slip. Now, what's a Freudian slip? You know, it's an error in speech, memory, or physical action that is interpreted as occurring due the interference of some unconscious, subdued wish, conflict, or train of thought. It seems to me that he keeps having these Freudian slips when he's talking about African Americans, whether they're black people, or whether they need people. But something is going on here, and we cannot just stand by and let this happen. Jima, what happened here?
Well, he said what we think he said. And I'm just trying to figure out why he keeps able to get away with it. And from the media, it's like, I don't know what they're waiting on to call him out on his obvious problem, not with the president's policies, but with the president's race. his obvious problem, not with with everybody being on Medicare or welfare, but black people. Because what he said was in his statement wasn't about everybody else. It was about black people. That's what he said. He said, I don't want to give black, blonde, whoever people. He didn't say people. He was real specific on who he was talking about.
Exactly.
So once again, I mean, you know, and nobody's talked about that. Nobody's talked about the fact that, you know, we know percentage-wise who receives health and aid, help and aid more than black people. But that's not who he said. He said black people. So he has a problem with black people. And I'm not going to say people of color. He got a problem with black people because that's all he keep talking about. They all seem to have a problem with black people because in an instance where we are not even a topic of conversation, they bring us up in the conversation. So they say, a media will say, well, he's just talking to his base. Okay, but when the president talks directly to his base, when he sat there on television and told Trayvon Martin's parents, I understand, because if I had a son, he would look like Trayvon. He the one
and they lost their mind. Boy, they lost their mind.
They lost their mind on that. But he can't talk to his base, but they can say all kind of crazy nonsense to their base, and it's okay.
And the media justified by saying he catering to his base. Oh, is he just catering to his base? It's okay. He does that. But let Barack Obama does it.
Right.
I do it.
And you want me to believe that? Right. And you want me to believe he can turn that rhetoric off when it's time for a general election? No, he can't. Because when you feel a certain way about something, and it's obvious that he has a deep-seated, I'm going to go ahead and quote Glenn Beck here, since he, you know, he has a deep-seated hatred toward black people, although Glenn Beck said white people. But I'm going to say towards black people, because the venom he spits out when he mentions anything to have to do with black people, you can just feel the nastiness of it all. And it's almost like, who am I listening to? And am I in 2012 or am I in 1912? Because I don't know.
Which brings me to my next point about we want our country back. And if you notice the rhetoric over the last few years, the Tea Party started talking about we want our country back. And most recently, at least going into this election season, people have been saying, actually, they have been attacking women and their women's rights. And now they seem to be attacking African Americans. And next, they'll probably be attacking African American rights. So to me, it puts in perspective this whole notion of we want our country back.
Well, yeah, but there's not a next. I mean, they've already attacked African Americans in terms of the voting suppression.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
You know, that's, you know, the biggest group that will be impacted will be black people. Hispanics will be as well, as will the elderly and as will the young. But the largest race group that will be affected will be black people. And so they've already started that. So that's not, you know, something they're gonna do. They're already doing it. And when you go back to the fact that, you know, we have Sarah Palin to thank for taking our country back, you know. She is the one that began that whole carrying of that mantra. And it's unfortunate that at the end of that movie, John McCain instructed her, do not fall prey to the fringes of the party. And she just act like that didn't even mean nothing to her because that's exactly where she went to. And so here we sit and they want to take their country back to what? It wasn't yours in the beginning.
Yeah,
how you gonna take something back that you took?
Exactly.
But see, that's a part of the story that doesn't get the right amount of attention because we want to. How do you discover a place that was already here? But you know, that's a whole. You know, that's over people's heads. And then how do you take something back that wasn't yours? And then take me back to what? To what time? You wrap yourself in the Constitution. And you want to take everything to the Constitution, and I wasn't a part of that. So is that the country you want to go back to, where I wasn't as a female or as a black person? I wasn't included in that. So is that what I'm hearing you say? And that's what somebody needs to challenge them on. And the media will not do it when they will not go down to the next question when it's about. Well, what do you mean you want to take your country back? to what? And you wrap yourself in the Constitution. What does that mean? Because the Constitution did not have any of the amendments. So even while they wrapping themselves up in the Constitution and they want to talk about their First Amendment rights, that wasn't part of the original Constitution.
That's right. 323-580-5712 is the number to call. 323-580-5712 is the number to call. We're going to go to the phone lines. We're going to go to last four. 3732. You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name. Where are you calling from? Last four. 3732. Your mic is hot.
Yes, this is Mr. Motivator.
Hey, Mr. Motivator. How are you?
I'm doing great. Just wanted to let you know I'm really enjoying the program. And there's just, man, this information is just mind-blowing that you guys are putting out here today.
Well, we appreciate that, Mr. Motivator. You got a comment or a question?
I just thought of a comment, and maybe you could add more to that. I know at the start of the show you mentioned about the Montgomery bus boycott. And to me, that really sort of hit a spot with me, because I think so much was started through the Montgomery bus boycott. And out of that, I think of respect and the start of the civil rights movement, and also people, leaders like the lady that, wouldn't take a seat in the back of the bus. You know who I'm talking about?
Rosa Parks.
There you go, Miss Rosa Parks. You know, that Montgomery bus boycott, it motivated people to take a stand for what's right. And do you feel that through this situation with the young man who was victimized and who was shot, do you think that this will cause us to want to look at things, as you said earlier, that will hit them in the money pocket, or will start more people to moving forward and saying that, hey, you know, our work is not done here, and there's a lot that we still need to do in order to fight for rights in this country?
Well, first of all, let me say thank you for your call, and that's a great question, Mr. Motivator. I'm going to respond in this fashion, and I'm going to let Jima respond. My point was by bringing up, in the conversation that Jima and I had, by her bringing up the Montgomery bus boycott, it put the current-day Trayvon situation in perspective for me. I fell into the microwave generations. This generation's microwave mentality, if you will, with respect of situation, solution happen, you know, so quickly. And if it doesn't happen in a quick manner, and I put quick in quotations, then I kind of get bored or I kind of get put in a situation where I use the term fatigue. And, you know, the truth of the matter is, when you look at the Montgomery bus boycott, the campaign lasted from December 1st, 1955, until December 20th, 1956. But it ended with a federal ruling. And it just didn't end because they said, yep, we stopped and we got what we want. It ended with something of substance that lasted for basically, you know, for an eternity, basically. And so, you know, I'm glad we had the conversation. Jima and I really always, I mean, that's why I love her so much, because we really get, you know, we take the layer off. We peel the onion back a little bit more than just the first two layers, right? We try to get deeper. And for her to bring that back to my attention, to bring that back to my remembrance, make me know that this thing I cannot give up. I cannot use that language of fatigue anymore. I cannot go out and say I'm tired of hearing it, because, again, we've only been talking about this a couple of months. So we're really just in our infancy when it comes to, you know, finding justice for this case. And then secondly, I want to say that although we drew the parallels between the persistence that we must have today as they conveyed back then in 1955, there is a difference. And the difference is that the boycott caused a crippling financial deficit for the Montgomery Public Transit System. Right there is a gap that we have, in my estimation, with this case. Because if we can draw a parallel to the bus boycott's crippling financial deficit that they placed on the Montgomery Public Transit System, then we kind of got them by the gonads, if you know what I mean. And that's the thing that's the similarities and the things that are not so similar in this particular case. Jima, how you respond to that question?
Well, I really think for the people that was part of the Montgomery Improvement Association was looking to be treated equally and to be treated fairly, and all they wanted was a seat, and all they wanted was to be able to sit where there was an open seat. That's all they wanted. And so in its most simplest terms, it turned into, you know, something of greater significance in our history. And if you look at the fact that that happened in the 50s, and that was kind of the beginning of the organized struggle of what, you know, what would be next, and, you know, what would be the next battle, and then what would be the next battle, because we went from you know, then we had to fight to get the right to vote, and then we had to fight to keep that right to vote, where we fight now. And so what we, you know, I think the next step would be not just in Sanford, but, you know, there has to be a coming together of the minds to say, here are some things that if we were to take a hard look at, we could have an impact on. And that has to happen city by city. You know, what might be an issue in Montgomery may not have been an issue in Philadelphia. You know what I'm saying? So they had another struggle to fight in Philadelphia, but that didn't mean they wasn't fighting for something. And I think, you know, what we have to do is find the things that are common, excuse me, for us all. Like right now, the common is the voter suppression. That's across the board, right? And that's something across the board we can take a look at and figure out, you know, what can we do on an individual basis that's going to help ensure the fact that my voting rights are not suppressed, or my child's voting rights are not suppressed. And then we look on how can we use this movement, because we don't want this to become a moment. And I'm, you know, we've really actually only been doing this for 2 weeks, really, because he was, you know, he's been dead 30 days now, a little bit over 30. And so we just got on the bandwagon and just got all the, you know, started applying the pressure over the last 2 weeks. So surely, you know, we can at least, you know, go as long as he's been dead. You know what I'm saying? I don't want us to just
Give
up now and be like, really? You know, and all we have is frustration. Because, see, what happens when you don't channel frustration, it becomes anger, and then you do crazy stuff. So we don't want another riot in our community that happened, you know, when Martin was killed, when Malcolm was killed, Rodney King, we turned over stuff everywhere. You know, Katrina, we turned over stuff. That was unnecessary and counterproductive. So we got to have a bigger vision about what it is we want to see accomplished. And at the end of the day, we want the Department of Justice to have a hard line against racial profiling.
Absolutely.
And racial profiling is for black people, Muslims, white people, gay people. I don't care. However you racially profiling, that needs to be something that is completely done away with. You should not. I mean, and every black person I know has walked into a store and found themselves being followed. I don't know one that, but the sad part is we'll say they wasn't following us, right? And so because we want to play like it's not happening and it's not the reality of it, then we won't do nothing about it. And that's probably why for so long we won't say we got pulled over because we was black. We're going to say we got pulled over because we was something else happening. Maybe I didn't put my signal on. We'll start making excuses for the bad behavior of the police officer.
That's that denial.
Because because we don't want it to be what we know it is. But just like I said last week and the week before, until you call it what it is, you'll never be able to deal with it. So we've got to call when it's a racist issue, we have to call it that. When it's a discriminatory practice, we have to call it that. If I'm the only black person in the store and I got three people around me, I'm going to say you're around me because I'm the only black person in the store. Because you got 20 other people that ain't nobody watching. So what is that about? I have to call that. I have to say to you, I don't need your help right now. You can go help somebody else. I'm going to call you out on what you know. I'm going to let you know I know you following me. So whatever you got planned, I'm up on your game. And we've got to be able to articulate that, not in a threatening manner, not loud and crazy and obnoxious, but just real clear to the person following you, I see you. Or get
That's
on the
right.
phone
That's
after
right.
you calling somebody and say, somebody watching me in the store. I mean, they don't know if you're talking to anybody or not. I mean, but you got to be able to let people know, I know what you're doing, and I'm not finna be that person. I'm not going to be her. You're not going to have me up in the office somewhere talking about I stole something.
That's right. So Mr. Motivator, I hope we answered your question satisfactorily, and I hope that – do you have any other comments or questions?
No, you did. You guys did a great job of answering my question, and so I'm just going to sit back and enjoy the rest of the show.
All right. Thank you for your call. And of course, you can listen to Mr. Motivator, Mr. Motivator show on Saturdays at 5 o'clock Central. Again, Mr. Motivator show at 5 o'clock Central. Okay, Jimmy. So I want to kind of shift here for the last segment about this thing with autism. What's going on with autism in America these days?
I'm not sure. I think it's environmental more than anything, that we're at a time where I think the last report came out that 1 in 88 kids will be diagnosed with autism. And I think that's a high number. I know personally, just myself, I know 5 people whose kids are autistic. And to me, I think that's a high number. I mean, just that to know personally that amount of people who deal with that. And so something is going on in the environment that we are not acknowledging. I go back to when you tell me the story of how you guys were in down home in Alabama and by the river. There used to be, you said, was it 3-legged frog or 3-eyed frog? Which one was it?
3-eyed.
Okay. And that's not normal, right?
Absolutely not normal.
I mean, you know, but because y'all had been seeing them, it wasn't no big deal because there were 3-eyed frogs everywhere, right? I mean, so when we have to say that's not normal to have a three-eyed frog, it's not normal that this many people still at this day and age are being diagnosed with autism. It's not normal. And so what are we going to do? Who's going to be the one to take a look at the environment? And by environment, I mean those things that are in our food. I agree with you. I think 95% of all illnesses is connected to the food supply. There's no way anybody can convince me anything else at this juncture because it's just too many things happening. Too many children are born a certain way. You know, too many kids come into the world already diseased, already with heart problems, and it has a lot to do with what we're putting into our bodies, which then goes into, you know, our bloodstream, which then flows into what's growing inside of our womb. And so not just the mother, but when the mother and, you know, the father get together, what comes out of him goes into her. So what we don't know what's in that. What's in the sperm going into the egg? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, I think we have to go back, all the way back to that, and talk about, you know, the environment. What are we putting in our bodies that for a nation that's supposed to be a Christian nation, once again, we're falling short because we're supposed to honor our bodies. They're supposed to be a temple, and we're not. We're treating it as anything such because of the things we've allowed to come in, because we became a microwave society. Just think about microwaves and waves and what it takes to cook something that used to take 2 hours. You can put it in the microwave, and it's 30 minutes. You know, something about that's not normal. But because we wanted it to faster, somebody said, well, try this. Now try the instant. Now try the this. And I just add the water. I mean, you talk about all the time the science project of the mashed potatoes and then the instant mashed potatoes.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's weird to me how you can just turn these flakes. You add water, heat, and all of a sudden this food that you're going to eat just puffs up, and it's food.
Puffs up.
That's not normal. That's chemistry, and that's science, and you shouldn't be. It's not natural.
Exactly. And so when you look at all of those things, you look at the amount of fast food places that have grown over the years. Selling.
Not to mention pink slime.
Who are we going to talk about the pink slime? You know, that you have so many different types of restaurants open all hours of the night to give you whatever it is you think you might want at 3 o'clock in the morning. And then you come home, and then your work life and what's happening. And, you know, so there has to be a better way. And just like it took forever for them to finally get on board, and I think there's a comment that somebody on Bill Maher's show made on Friday around smoking. And, you know, how that push came to limit where you can smoke and where, and, you know, all those sorts of things, which is now decreased the amount of people that smoke. But now we're getting cancer just breathing. So we have to, somebody has to stand up and say, you know, there's something, we can no longer spray our food with this pesticide. Because we really don't know what's in it. We really don't.
Right. So for those that may have not been following the story, there's a story in the Huffington Post a couple of days ago that was really a byproduct of what Reuter put out. And it says, new estimates 25% higher than in 2006. Rate for boys is 5 times that of girls. Expert question, what increase is real? And basically it says about 1 in 88 children in the United States has autism or related disorder. The high estimate to date, and one that is sure to revive a national argument over how the condition is diagnosed and treated. The estimate released on Thursday by the Centers of Disease and Control and Prevention represents an overall increase of about 25% since the last analysis in 2006, and a near doubling of the rate reported in 2002. Among boys, the rate of autism spectrum disorder is 1 in 54, almost 5 times that of girls, in whom the rate is 1 in 252. One thing the data tells us with certainty, there are many children and families who need help. And so, you know, there's a direct correlation of the amount of increase and the amount of environmental protection laws that have changed over the last few years. So I wonder, when will this debate take hold? Who is going to hit before we take action? Jimmy, what is it going to take for us to really do something about it?
Once again, I don't know, because you have lobbyists on both sides of the argument who are paid to argue their point. And because they're paid to argue that point, they spend all kind of money and resources to find data to support whatever it is they're being paid to say. So, you know, Congress, because of its ties to the lobbyists, has failed us as a nation to keep us safe. And in some instances, keep us safe from ourselves because they are in the pockets of the lobbyists. So I don't know, because until we get rid of that group of people that some kind of way just, you know, over time became so influential in Washington that the people that was elected to do a job don't even do it, don't even think about doing it. We're not going to get to the end of it. Those numbers would be more staggering the next time the report comes out in 5 years. It'd be more staggering. And that's unfortunate because I think it's something that we could control.
And we can control it. And it won't. I don't think anything is going to happen until it hits home. And what home is, of course, some national politician or some national cause that takes place that hit them in the pocket is going to cause them to make a difference. But that's the only, I mean, that's the, in most cases, that's what has to take place. Again, we have to have that sacrificial lamb in order for somebody to do something. We know better right now. We know racial profiling has been going on for many, many years. We know African Americans have been incarcerated at a higher rate than anybody else. We know smoking would cause cancer. We know that there's some environmental issues. But without that sacrificial lamb to raise awareness across the globe, then it seems to me like, more of the same. It's unfortunate, but that's the way it is. It's the American way.
Hmm.
Okay, so we're approaching the end of our show, and I want to talk a little bit before we go about Oprah's life class. And Jima, you're in that class for the second semester, I should say. And so let's talk a little bit about what's going on there and what are the highlights of you and Oprah.
Okay. The class started this past Monday, and she's taking it on the road this season, and she was in St. Louis. And she had Iyanla Van Zant on there as the expert, and they were talking about forgiveness, which is in itself heavy, just in itself. And so one of the things that, and pain, where do you go when you're in pain, and what is pain? And so Yama talked about pain and what we're supposed to do when we're in pain. And a lot of times we recognize something about ourselves, but then we're not really trying to do nothing about it. And so we don't pay attention to some of the things that we're dealing with. And so she talked about there was a guy on there, his name was Steve, and he had been addicted to something or another, 20 years, had an addiction or more. But now he's been sober 10 years. And so basically what she told him was he needs to tell a new story about his life and not always telling the story about his addiction. He needs to tell a new story because he's been clean and sober now for 20 years. I mean, for 10 years. And so a lot of times we stay in our past situations because we keep telling the story. And one of the things she talked about was pay. She said pain stood for pay attention inward now. And so you need to pay attention to what's going on the inside of you in order for you to really be able to address, the issues that got you to that point. And one of the main things that I walked away with was she talked about how we ask for something. It was two things, but these two stood out. We ask for something, and yet when we get it, we're not happy with what we got. So let's say there was a lady on there who had said she just wanted to be a mother. And, doctors told her she could never, she wouldn't be ever able to have a child. And her point was to prove them wrong, that she would have a child and she would be a mother. And, so she had her child and all was well, leading right into what our previous segment was about. About a year later, she finds out that her son is autistic. And so for her, she feels cheated and robbed because she now, what she wanted from the child, she's not even going to be able to get because he's autistic. But what Iyanla said to her, what did you ask for? You asked to be a mother, and that's what you are. And that a lot of times we say we want something. We talk about, even in relationships, we want this type of man, this type of woman, or whatever, we want this. And yet we don't talk about those things that are foundational that will secure a person. We talk about the surface stuff, tall and dark and handsome, but you need to talk about whether or not boo-boo got a job, whether boo-boo got some work.
Right.
When how boo-boo treat his mama, how he treat his sisters. So that'll be a clear indication how he's going to treat you. And so we don't do that. And so, you know, she just really spent some time, you know, trying to get people to understand. And then one other thing that really, really, really resonated with me, not because it was brand new information, but just because sometimes you have to be reminded. And she talked about how we sometimes we give of ourselves and then we wonder why we're so tired and drained out. And she says, and then Oprah said, well, isn't that being selfish when, you know, if you're just concerned about yourself? And she said, no, that's being self-full. And by that I mean you give from your overflow that's in the cup, not what's on the inside of the cup. What's on the inside of the cup is for you. It's the overflow that you give to somebody else. And that was just like, you know, amazing for me. Like I said, not that it was brand new information, but just a visual of the inside of the cup. So if I give you everything on the inside, I don't have anything for myself, and I'm thirsty or I'm hungry.
That's right.
I'm tired, you know. But if I give you from what's overflowing, because my cup runneth over,
right?
So if I'm giving you from what he's giving me, the running over, that's what I give away. Because if I give away what's running over, he'll replenish me. And so that there would be a continual running over, so that I'm not ever going to give all of me. And that was just profound for me. I mean, in such a manner that I hadn't looked at it in the symbolism of the cup, and that what's the inside of the cup is what's for me. It's what's the overflowing of the cup is what I give out to others. And I think,
you know,
we don't do that.
Right. Taking a look at that last point, you know, because the reality is we all have an overabundance of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
even materialistically or just, you know, within ourselves, you know, we have overabundance, but sometimes we try to hold on to that excess too.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that was really interesting, the fact that, you know, the illustration about the cup running over. But I'd like to talk a little bit about your first point too. And, you know, I wrote down here putting self first. And I want you to elaborate a little bit more about the fact that we ask for things and we get exactly what we ask for, but we don't want it. We try to be specific, but we are specific on the superficial. And I say that because in a lot of cases, I remember when, you know, I have my conversations with God, and I say, hey, you know, I'm looking for this, or I want the victory in this particular situation. I stop trying to solve the problem for God and say, here is what I need, and if it's your will, give me what you want as opposed to what I want, because I know I can't fix it. I know I can't draw up the blueprint that I think is going to be right for me. So I make the request of, what do you want me to have? How do you want me to fulfill this, as opposed to me saying, trying to do it on my own? I think that's what people go wrong, is when they ask, you know, I want a child and I want that child to be A, B, and C, as opposed to saying, Lord, give me what you want me to have and I'll be happy with it.
Right. And I think a lot of times, because we really don't know what we want. We know a lot more what we don't want, but we really don't know what we want.
Exactly.
And if we did, we haven't, because when you know exactly what you want, when you go to your favorite restaurant, when I go to Ruth Chris, no, I'm just kidding. When I go to Ruth Chris and Steakhouse, I know exactly what I want. I know exactly what it's supposed to taste like. And if it fails to be what I want and taste like I know it's supposed to taste, what am I going to do with it?
You're going to send it back, absolutely.
There's going to be some situations and circumstances. So just like I know exactly what I want when it comes to that, I need to know exactly what I want when it comes to my life. I need to be able to petition the Lord in such a manner that I am specific in what it is I'm asking him for. If I say I want $1 million, then he might give me that $1 million, but I'm going to have to work my tail off to get it, right? I didn't say how I wanted to get the $1 million, right? I just say I want $1 million. I say I want a financial blessing. Well, I need to be specific on how I want to get that financial blessing. Lord, I want you to pour down into me something that I can give out that people will pay me for. so that I can get my $1 million. See, that's specific. As opposed to I want a financial blessing. Well, $5 is a financial blessing if you ain't got $5.
Mm-hmm.
So put a dollar amount on what you want that blessing to be, and then tell them what you plan to do with it. I mean, you know, we have to be, as you stated, specific and not surface. I want a man that will love me like I know I'm supposed to be loved. I want a man that will love me. I want a man that's godly. I want a man that prays every day. You know, I want a man that's going to take care of his family. Not I just want a man, because you'll get a man. And that's about all you're going to get. I mean, he'll be a man, but he's not going to offer you any of the other things that you're looking for. And so we have to be specific in those things. And even when we're talking about careers and promotions and, you know, getting out of bad and tough situations, Lord, if you just get me out of this, okay, he might get you out of it and you're going to be scarred. But you asked him to get you out of it. So if you want it to come out a certain way, then you ask for it specifically, Lord, I need you to get me out of this situation where I may have a scar, but it didn't send me to the brink where I was about to die. Ask him for it. Ask him to take you out of wherever you are and put you into a better place, but also let him know how you want to get there. And that's what being specific is about.
So tell the listening audience out there how to get, how to become a part of this class. This is, again, it's your second semester with Oprah. She does it and online. You're able to kind of call in. She does a Skype component. There's a television component. So tell people how you, and you was a part of the first million that got the book too, right?
Yes, I did. I was able to get my journal from the first life class that she did. Has Oprah's life class and has an inscription in there as well. And so the class, as I stated, is on Monday night. And you can watch it online on her website at oprah.com and then find the headline that says Life Class. Or you can watch it on the channel OWN, the OWN Network at 7 o'clock on TV. And online you get to see all the behind-the-scenes things when they go to commercial breaks. Sometimes they're still talking with people in the audience and with the guests and things of that nature. So you get to see the whole show in its entirety when you watch it online. And you just, it's free. You just go and you listen to what people are dealing with. And I think tomorrow's life class is going to be with Tony Robbins, who's a motivational type speaker that does an array of different things, takes you through an array of different exercises. Where he's sometimes on stage for 10, 12 hours nonstop working and helping people work through things. And then at the end of that, there is a process where they walk across some burning coals, and which I find to be quite fascinating to see that. So he's going to be on there, and I think next Monday night Bishop T.D. Jakes will be on talking about forgiveness as well. And you know, he has a new book out entitled Let It Go. And so I think he'll be on there kind of talking about those two things. So it seems like this is going to be a really good class this go round in terms of the format and the different cities that they're visiting. And I'm excited about it because I get something out of it, and I'm just thankful that you and William Patrick allow me the opportunity to focus in on it and let me get out of it what I think I need. So I just encourage people, even if you don't stay for the whole 2 hours, or you go back and check it back online, because you can go back and look at it online at a later date if you can't do it tomorrow evening. But I just encourage you to just give it a chance and begin to write it down. There's something else that Iyanla talked about, you know, and the scripture talks about write a vision and make it plain. And we sometimes talk a lot about what we want to do, but we haven't written anything down yet. And then when we write it down, we forget where we put it. And so we've got to learn how to write our vision down. And that when you're going through and you've written your vision down, your vision will pull you through whatever that situation is you're dealing with. So if you've written a vision about where you see yourself, where you see your family, where you see your husband, where you see your career going, you've written that down, and you continue to see that every single day, that will keep you moving. That will push you to try a little bit harder, to work up a little bit, to wake up a little bit earlier and work out a little bit longer. I mean, whatever it is that you needed to do for you. But if you don't write it down, then you're doing yourself a disservice and you're expecting, you know, something for nothing, basically.
Yeah, not to mention, I mean, with the everyday busyness of life, you can go off on a tangent. You can your focus change, or things come up, your life circumstances happens. But if you have that vision written down, you can always go back and revisit it. You know, you can make those proper corrections and say, hey, you know, I'm getting off track here. Let me refocus, if you will. And so in Habakkuk 2:2, it says, write the vision, make it plain. And that's one of my favorite scriptures because, you know, I live my life by that daily. You know, I was telling you, giving an example on Friday when I worked from home that day, and I was, it's a lot of things that was happening that day. So much was happening, and I failed to write down what I was going to do for that day, and I was just all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I knew by noon I was scattered. And so the afternoon I had to go back, take a pause, break, and then begin to plan my next day because that day was half gone now. So
mm-hmm.
all the things I wanted to get done did get accomplished in an efficient manner. And so I began, the first thing I did the next morning was wake up and I wrote everything down. Again, I live my life by that because I know, you know, circumstances, life happens. And so we really got to focus, write the vision, make it plain. All right, we're closing the end of my show. Are you going to be watching the Celebration of Gospel tonight, Jima?
Of course I am. I am so excited. I cannot wait to see the tribute to one of my all-time favorite gospel singers, and that's Mahalia Jackson, and who I think probably every year I was in elementary school, I had to sing a Mahalia Jackson song in the Black History play. So, and it didn't, you know, I didn't even care. I was just, there was going to be room for a Mahalia song. And they, you know, even if it didn't fit into what we was doing. But,
right.
So I'm excited about that. I'm excited to see what Kelly Price does and her tribute to Whitney Houston. And so I'm excited about it. There are times when, you know, Steve Harvey has his faults and he has his ills, as we all do. But, you know, you can't say that he doesn't have a yearning to get to know God. And so whenever he's there, he shows you that he's growing in so many different areas. And we've got to let him, you know, be ready to grow and not hold him back based on our own opinions about certain things. So I'm excited about it.
You know, and that's the key component, right? Growth. You're right. You don't stay in that place and don't continue to grow. That's where we all falter, and we don't try to keep growing. And so
right.
we're all a witness of his maturity, if you will,
mm-hmm.
over the last decade, just by seeing his language change, his behavior change, his goals. I mean, even when he was on that television show that time, just talking about his life experience, his growth. I mean, we can all see his growth, and I applaud that. I mean, I applaud
right.
it. You know. Aggressively, if you will. Okay,
mm-hmm.
so any final comments?
Let me see. Yay to University of Kansas for their victory on last evening as they head to the final two championship game against Kentucky. Go Big 12. We won't have that conversation. We've had that already about the
SEC,
Big 12.
Baby,
and
SEC.
So, you know, congratulations to them. They messed up a whole lot of people's brackets, I'm sure. By still being in the fight and by beating Ohio State last night. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited as we go into this week of those of us that are practicing Christians and we believe in the resurrection. We go into this week here of Palm Sunday and leading up into, you know, what some call Easter, although that's not in the Bible anywhere from what I've been told. So we go into Resurrection Week. We go into Tuesday for our day of prayer for justice in the Trayvon Martin situation. And just, you know, today was the day also. I don't know if anybody remembers this day. And we all thought it was a big, I know I did, was a big April Fool's joke when I heard on the radio back in Kansas City, 103.3, KPRS, when they announced over the radio that Marvin Gaye was dead. And it was the day, it was this day, 1984, that his father killed him, shot him. And so I thought that was the biggest joke. And then I just kept listening. And I was like, oh, my goodness, this is for real. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we lost one whose music today would his music from yesterday could still go on today in terms of what's going on in Mercy Mercy. We could probably play those songs in rotation to see, you know, where it is we need to go and how it is we need to move forward. And so, you know, I'm just looking forward to the day where we find a voice in the entertainment world that speaks to the issues that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, I'm excited about this week. I have a lot coming up in the month of April, and excited about our blog and what we have going on with TaylorMade and getting ready for our summer program at our church, at Faith Missionary Baptist Church, where we'll be once again having a summer feeding and reading program for kids ages 4 to 18. And go to our website if you want to donate to that cause. We appreciate whether it's money, whether it's time, whether you have some items you want to donate for the children. We take it all. So I'm just excited about it and just looking forward to the week.
All right. That's our show for today. And, of course, I would like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. And a special thanks to Mr. Motivator. Again, don't forget to check out his show on Saturdays at 5 p.m. That's the Mr. Motivator Show. And, of course, a special thanks to my co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent Jima Hill Cook. Now, don't forget to follow her on Twitter, and that's at AskJima, AskJema. Now, you're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog, TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TAILORMADE TalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's our show for today. Have a good one.